My young eyes followed the buzzing bug that flew from the dinner table all the way up to the light that offered illumination to our meal, and I wondered what such freedom was like. It was something I always thought about when I was 8 years old. The atmosphere at the table was sharp as lightning, forcing us all to anticipate a yelling order or a shriek of exasperation from Mother's lips. But all three of us at the table maintained a deathly silence as we waited on our meal. It was past 6 p.m. and it was our first meal of the day. Mother said it was good that way because our body was the temple of God, and God did not like his temple stuffed with too much food, which would end up in waste. Not even when we complained to Mother that our stomachs hurt from starving did she budge. She had an explanation for it.
It's God's way of preparing you for his kingdom, you piece of shit!
She would cuss.
In heaven there is no eating, and you would have to live without food. Be grateful I'm giving you these lessons.
So we only ate once a day. And even when we ate, Mother always seemed so angry. We never saw Mother eat until that day. And she would lock herself up in her room when we ate. And her words were law that we did not trespass her door with our corrupt bodies filled with earthly food. She had three of us, and I was the youngest. My brother Jonas was 16, and my sister Kendall was 12. But you could never tell because we were always so scrawny from having too little to eat. The bug landed on the lamp, and it blanched suddenly. I sensed it was burnt by the heat of the lamp as it slowly fell off its flight course. My mouth watered for the bug. If it fell, it would be a great addition to my meal, I thought to myself. The bug mocked my expectations as it picked itself up from the fall and jolted back towards the light. Come down here, stupid, Jonas muttered, smacking his lips. His words drew my attention, and when I looked at him, I saw his eyes were also on the bug. Kendall caught my gaze when I looked at her. The knowledge we both shared was immediate. We all wanted it. We were so hungry.
What was the yapping about?
Mother asked as she walked towards us, carrying the steel plate in her hands. All three of us looked at each other and maintained our silence. My stomach growled, and I suppressed it with a whimper. My senses immediately turned keen when the smell of potatoes filled my nostrils. The feeling was of savage desire for food. My muscles constricted and expanded in want, but it was usual, so I didn't give too much attention to it beyond that. I watched Mother walk over to the table and set the steel plate down. On the plate were portions of potatoes, mashed into a pudding, separated into three batches no more than the size of Jonas's fist. There was hesitation, which I did not notice because I was so dizzy from hunger.
Stay away from that plate, demon!
She barked at me when I reached over to have a piece of the food.
I cuss you! I cuss you in your lust for food! My stomach hurts!
I meowed, shirking back into my chair when the pang of hunger intensified from her bawling.
Mom, Jasmine's stomach hurts, Jonas said.
I knew there was trouble in the very moment he had spoken those words, standing up for me against Mother. Young as I was, I sensed the air was filled with tangible heaviness. My stomach loosened, and my body began to tremble from being so hungry. Yet there was the threat that we'd have to eat nothing that day because Jonas had spoken for me. Mother had done it before. She had kept us 3 days in the house with no food because Jonas had done a bad thing. I looked to my older brother, and he did not seem afraid. Jonas had a steely look in his eyes, and he stared up at Mother, who had barely sat on her seat on the table. She hovered on the seat, perplexed by his disrespect. I flushed with embarrassment at the thought of the entire sour mood being my fault.
What did your gutter mouth just utter?
Mother barked at Jason, even though her rigid eyes looked through our faces from child to child. Kendall's expression had become upturned, and she had an appearance of dismay. I sensed my own face become hot, and my nostrils were sore from the pain of holding back my tears. When Mother pushed the chair away from underneath herself and stood up to full stride, it was terrifying because the heft of her body covered the light above us. Mother's face was transformed when she was angry. Her wrinkles etched deeper, forming strange contours that made her appear bestial to my young eyes. I was still hungry, as I had not eaten the entire day, but my fear of what Mom might do replaced my hunger. What I felt were sharp slashes of angst in my stomach, and my breath was shallow.
"Speak to me, you demon of food! You unholy creature!"
Mother barked. And of all the things that I dreaded the most, it was the sincerity of her conviction. We were demons that food only fueled, and it was only a matter of time before she decided she would not anymore. The time that passed between my thought and the event did not exceed a few seconds. Mother spun around quickly and grabbed the steel plate from the table. She tossed it to the ground, spilling the only food we had, and my heart sunk into my empty stomach.
"I will kill all of you before you have demons strong enough to challenge me," she barked, pointing her fingers in all our faces.
She immediately reached her hands into the cutlery bowl, startling all of us. Kendall screamed, and I bawled. Jonas was still.
"Where are the forks and the knives?"
Mother squealed with maniacal enthusiasm. Kendall rushed over from her side of the table to mine, and she covered me in her embrace. Still, I saw what happened next through the gap in her arm. I saw Jonas stand up abruptly from where he had sat. He brought his hands quickly from his pants, and the steel blade of the knife caught the glint of light which reflected into my eyes. He brought down the knife with vicious swiftness on Mother's back. The sound of the knife stabbing into flesh affected me, and I shut my young eyes when he did it. "Mother's dead. We can have all we want to eat now. I'm starving," Jason said with an air of finality when he was done. I saw nothing of it, so it didn't affect me so much when a new sensation flushed through me at his words. I wondered if the bug felt the same when liberated.
I woke up feeling uneasy. My head felt heavy like iron, though also drained and disillusioned. I had been on medication for months upon months. Nothing ever changed for the better. My body only seemed to grow weaker, and that was her plan for me all along. My mother said I must take 10 pills a day to completely subdue my anxiety problems. She never showed me what the pills were, nor where she got them. I tried to figure out what they actually were, but I was never able to reach the decisive conclusion about what they contained. The risk was too severe. I just knew that whatever it was causing me to rot away, unable to exist as myself, but only as my mother's property. I would wake up every morning with a gaping hole in my stomach, churning my insides before I even left the bed. There was little left for me to try and improve upon or fix. I was merely a body left to suffer. I decided that day to take control of my life again. I had to begin, regardless of how terrified I truly was, of what roamed around the prison I was forced to call home. I clambered out of bed, barely having the energy to even stand, as I crawled across the bedroom floor to the wooden door standing solemnly at the other end of my room. It opened with a sinister creaking noise as I poked my head out, looking down either end of the hallway, checking for the immediate danger that I knew lurked somewhere in the house, waiting for me. After seeing the coast was clear, I crept out of my room, hastily stumbling towards the stairs, making my way down towards the kitchen below. I peered around the doorway looking into the kitchen, and there she stood, standing as a statue in the center of the room, glaring at me, my mother.
"Hello, Toby. How are you feeling, Toby? Any more head traumas?" my mother asked sweetly, still whilst glaring at me with her sharpened pupils, looking at me with an observant stance. Hi, Mom. Nothing more than usual. Nothing to worry about, really. What's for breakfast?" I asked, trying to divert her attention away from the medication. I could see her fangs rearing in the back of her mouth, preparing to spew the same venom she always does. The same question. As rhetorical as it was, she seemed to go on about it relentlessly and with the same intense magnitude of my headache. I was finding it agonizing to even listen to her drone on about the morning menu of bread, water, and pills. Toby, don't lie to your mother now. How is your head? Her tone shifted into a sinister, accusatory passion. I felt suddenly numb with fear, but kept my head down and attempted to relinquish to her interrogation. Sorry, mother. I don't know what came over me. I feel a little heavy in the head, and my stomach doesn't feel so great either. That's why I was asking about breakfast. I felt her glare subside, and she once again put on the motherly act she always did, looking at me with a wide grin, seemingly calmed by my apology. However, beyond the grin, her blood was boiling. She was verging on eruption. Oh, dear Toby, let's get you some more medication then, shall we? Before I could ready myself to answer her, she had already scuttled halfway up the stairs to fetch some more medicine for me to have for breakfast, along with my minimal meal of bread and water. I dreaded gulping down any more pills, just to have my stomach toil with the poison it released inside me. So this time, I was going to try and escape it. I truly believed that I would be able to hide them in my mouth, if only the pills had been smaller. Toby, here are your pills. Wolf them down quickly so I can leave for work. She slapped them down on the table with a vicious hand gesture, hassling me to take them swiftly so she could be on her way. I grabbed every pill in one great handful and shoved them deep into my mouth, burying them under my tongue. As I did so, I felt them soften against the underside of my tongue. The contents would release if I held them there too long. Mother needed to leave soon. When Mother asked me to open my mouth wide so she could check to see if I had swallowed, I did so with a nervous shudder, expecting only the worst to come. I could feel her gaze set upon the very back of my mouth. Oh God, I thought. She'd seen them. She leaned backwards slowly. Her smile darkened into a foul look of hatred. Toby, what did we say about liars? Her stare was lifeless and piercing. I lifted my head, my eyes devoid of all remaining hope, and stared into her dead eye and muttered under my breath. I whimpered. Please don't. The curtains suddenly collapsed, and an ape-like fury took over her. She stooped deeply into a furious rampage, grasping my arm with her spindly fingers. She ripped me straight out of my seat. Then, in one bulk of emotion, she grabbed a nearby metal pot and launched it into the back of my skull. But before it could connect, I flung my body to the floor to dodge the blow. The look in her eyes amassed into two balls of flaming anger, penetrating my very soul as I pulled away from her bony grasp and sprinted towards the doorway with incredible haste. I could escape. This was my chance. I reached the hallway, my mother close behind, tailing me with the pot raised above her head, the strike being prepared imminently. There wasn't much time left. If I didn't escape now, Mother would hold back with pummeling me into a thick pile of flesh to then feed upon for the next few days. It was now or never. I grabbed the doorknob of the front door. I twisted it with a shaking grasp, the panic surging into me with the might of a charging rhino. I heard a click. The door swung open, and I fell back, startled by the vision of daylight. I had been locked inside ever since my mother's brain broke. That was over 10 years ago, when Father was still alive. I heard her footsteps boom through the corridor. The sound urged my legs to move in a rapid motion straight out of the doorway, out onto the street, and into the freedom that came with it. I could still hear Mother's bellowing, echoing far behind me as I ran. I didn't stop running. I couldn't stop running. fear had injected itself into the ravines of my mind. The feeling of exposure felt exhilarating. I had escaped. I eventually came across a group of adults walking across the street opposite to me. I had been suffering such dire malnutrition for so long that I collapsed right there in front of them as I tried begging them for help. As my eyes dimmed, I could see them crowding around me, asking if I was okay. Quite clearly, I was not. I woke up in a white room the next day. I had multiple cords attached to my wrists. A man dressed in all white, holding a clipboard, mouthing to me words in some blurred dialect that I couldn't understand. He continued to speak until eventually I could make out the words. "Don't worry. Your mother is here to take you home." A skeletal figure of a woman then walked in behind him. I could make out the same wide grin. I thought I had escaped. I truly did. "Toby, it's time to go home."
When Mom told me she'd begun to see someone new, I was alarmed at first. Yet the smile in her eyes, deep sunken contours that strayed deeper from the shades of her optical disc, held promise and assurance of discernment. I trusted it. It was the same way I had trusted Mother's ability to care for me as a 14-year-old, 2 years since, and now I was 16 when she left my dad. The troubles with their marriage had begun with an affair he had at his workplace. Scandal had been messy enough that it smeared the entire neighborhood and dragged its way to the porch of our house, where Mother had heard of it. 2 years since, and she had been single. Now, she wasn't. "How long?" I asked, uncertain as I peered into her eyes. "2 weeks," Mom whimpered back at me with an infectious grin, sprawling the width of her jaws. She giggled, entertained at her own thoughts, and my heart skipped. I was silent, and my mind raced through a dozen possibilities, staggering between the good and the bad. There were a few of the good and even fewer of the bad circumstances. The worst of all, I mused, was that this stranger who Mom had now given herself to would hurt her the same way Dad did. Mom's eyes bobbled in her orbs as she stared at me from over the table, in wonder of my lingering quietness. "You don't think it's a good idea? I invited him for dinner tonight since it's Thanksgiving, and we have a seat empty." She leered at the empty seat at the table. "You did what?" I balked. "Mom? Come on, Jasmine, it's only for tonight. Carlos is a good guy. What do you assume all of this turkey was for?" she said, and her darting stare went straight to the table. "Carlos?" "Yeah. You let me finish my story," she puffed. And just then our doorbell dinged. "Oh dear, that must be him. I'll get it." I heaved, and my eyes trailed Mom as she stood from where she had been seated, sauntering to the door with the excited skipping of youth at her feet. She was happy, and the moment seemed perfect. Too perfect. My stomach grumbled in protestation of the negative thought. Mom was happy, and that was all that mattered, I thought to myself as I sat with my own concern at heart. I thought of Dad, and imagined how his life must have turned in such a small moment of our lives as we had been apart. I placed a finger on the table, scraping the wooden surface noiselessly as the chirping noise of the indecipherable conversation at the door filtered into my hearing. I perched my ears to perceive even more, and the noise was gone, silent. The air in the house grew colder, and I felt an awry oppressiveness come upon the atmosphere itself. I struggled with the vibrations and the sickly sensations that came with it as my stomach continued to rumble. I adjusted on my seat furtively and cleared my throat with a loud cough when Mother appeared from the corner of my gaze with the stranger in tow. "Happy Thanksgiving!" the crude, unfamiliar voice belched out to me before I could take a full assessment of his features. "Happy?" The words trailed off my lips as I looked from Mom to him and back in consternation. "Thanksgiving," I completed the statement. My shivering was not unfounded, but I had no way of confirming as I stared him in the face. He had the look of own of controlled menace, masked under the cloak of good manners. An tangible disposition to vileness seeped out on first assessment, but I quickly dismissed this fundamental essence and turned my focus to his looks. He was a good-looking man, and he stood taller than Mom by at least a foot. He was neatly shaved, bare under his chin, and I suspected it was newly done, as I'd become familiar with my boyfriends, but I said nothing of it. His nose was perfect, perched up in his face like a bird's beak. His eyes were pearly, housing an unusually thin black pupil in them. His lips were well-carved, upturned, and clasping to each other tightly. He was perfect, and it was suspicious, even though I had no reason to suspect it.
"Hi, my name's Carlos, and I'm new in your neighborhood."
He introduced himself with an effusive smile, which made me uneasy, and I looked away quickly.
"Jasmine, this is Carlos, as I told you, and Carlos, this is my 16-year-old daughter, Jasmine."
Mother made the introductions. I noted the hesitation in his face to look away from me, and just before I caught it, he had snickered his way back to Mom's side. He whispered something into Mom's ears and peeked at me through the gap between them. I cleared my throat some more and picked up my fork from the table and feigned activity. Mom cackled loudly, the dirty laughter which I knew about but somehow wasn't allowed to say I did. "Are we going to dive into the Thanksgiving turkey, or do we have to wait?" I asked, clanging my fork against the edge of the plate to shake the uneasy sensation of Carlos standing right beside my mom. His height over her was intimidating. But more than I saw, I sensed something sinister unchecked in the way he glared at me sinfully as he whispered to Mom. Mom relished in his hushed gossip, and then soon turned to look in his eyes. Then she looked at me with a sheepish grin on her face.
"Honey, I think Carlos and I will need a minute upstairs. We'll be with you shortly," she hinted. "You can have some of the turkey, but do say grace."
An unruly demon gnawed deep in my stomach as I watched her guide him away from me. They disappeared from sight and I was alone. I heard a crash in the room. Mom squealed, and the rest of it was a muffled pounding about in the room. It was curious, but I felt no obligation to it. I felt the outbreak of perspiration on my forehead and my mouth dried. "Mom?" I jerked upright in the same instant that Mom's door slammed immediately with a violence that made my belly heavy with uneasiness. "Mom?" I walked gingerly up the stairs when she wouldn't answer me, and the slamming intensified, almost desperately. My heart beat into a wild frenzy, and I clutched my fingers together into a strong fist. I lifted my hands carefully to knock on the door, and just then, it swung open, and there he was, eyes twitching, fully clothed and perspiring. His demeanor fully revealed, Carlos was closer to a monster than he was to being human. I looked to his hands, and he held a strand of thin fabric. My eyes strayed, and there she lay in the background behind him, dead.
"I killed her so I can have you, babe," he said crudely.
The blood in my body ran cold with dread. My suspicions were right.
"Ah!" he cried in thrill as he raced towards me. I turned around and maneuvered down the stairs in a way that only I could manage. I raced to the door before he reached me, sensing the heat from his breath down my neck as I ran. It all happened in a blitzing daze when I rushed through the door. A loud grunt rumbled through the nighttime atmosphere as I raced out of the building, instinctively careful of the vacant, unrepaired stair that led up the porch. Carlos tumbled in a loud heap behind me, knocking his head against the steel pipe which had been placed there by the worker's mom had employed to have it checked. I looked behind me, and there he was, dead from the violence with which he had struck his head in his tumble.